Welcome to Rapidly Rotating Records, an hour of toe-tapping music from rapidly rotating 78 RPM records of the 1920s and 30s with yours truly, Glenn Robison. We've got dance bands, hot bands, sweet bands, show tunes, novelty tunes, blues, jazz, and more on everything from Aeolian to Xenophone and by everyone from Aronson to Zerke. On this evening's show, we're going to jump the fence and celebrate the birthdays of Lou Gold and Gene Rodemick, but beyond that, at this point, I really don't know what's going to happen. Last week, April 13th, marked the birth in St. Louis, Missouri, of bandleader Gene Rodemick. 3 years ago, Gene's great-grandson, Ray Rodemick, visited the massive Rapidly Rotating Records studio complex, and we devoted all of a special 90-minute show to Gene and his life and music. He hasn't been spotlighted since, and I figured it's time we do so again. I'll post a link on the website to that entire show, but tonight I'm going to play just a portion of my interview with Ray and play a few of Gene's records that we didn't get to hear on that show. Skipping the introductions, here's the beginning of that interview. Your great-grandfather was Eugene Frederick Rodemick, and like I say, he was born April 13th, 1890 in St. Louis. His father was Dr. Henry Rodemick, a dentist who played violin.
Yes, that's what we've read. I don't know much about the legacy because my actual father, he's also named Eugene Rodemick, had a messy divorce when he was a little kid and never actually got to associate with the father's side, which is where Gene Rodemick comes from. So it was kind of a revelation figuring out who he was when I was growing up as a kid. We get random phone calls from people in St. Louis saying that, oh, when I was a little girl or boy, I used to dance to Gene Rodemick's music. And we had no idea who they were talking about, except my father is named Eugene Rodemick. So we're thinking there must be some correlation. Going back in time, we actually realized that Gene Rodemick actually turned out to be a famous bandleader who has influenced most of the ragtime music that came out during that period. And I was quite surprised about that.
So he was a musical prodigy and had a perfect pitch, and he studied piano and classical music, was planning on becoming a concert pianist. As he was studying and went along, he added ragtime and popular tunes to his repertoire, and in 1915, he was playing piano at Sicardi's restaurant in St. Louis.
I actually went to St. Louis about 5 years ago. I had a friend that was a DJ out there, and I was looking around at the St. Louis Walk of Fame, and I guess Gene Rodemick has not quite made it onto that yet, but we're working on that.
Well, that's a shame. Yeah. That's a travesty, actually.
Yes.
He also accompanied Elsie Janus on tours in France in 1917 during World War I. After the war, he went back to St. Louis, and that's where he started fronting his 22-piece band at the Liberty Theater in 1918, and he played for about 6 years at the new Grand Central Theater, which was actually built especially for him, I believe. And they also had a residency at the Statler Hotel in St. Louis.
Yeah, lots of stuff going on in St. Louis back then. An exciting time.
His first recording was Come to the Moon in 1919, and he formed his own music publishing company in 1924. It had offices in St. Louis and New York, so that was a pretty big deal. The band also performed on Mississippi riverboats, including the Streckfus Line's JS Deluxe, a JS standing for John Streckfus. A number of members of the band went on to form their own bands, which gives you an idea of the quality of musicians that he had in the band. Those included Frank Trumbauer, Benny Kruger, Larry Connolly, who we'll talk about, I'm sure, as we go along, Alistair Wiley, whose Coronado Hotel Orchestra recorded for Brunswick in 1928, and David H. Silverman, who played piano. He recorded for Brunswick in 1923. Well, you've mentioned a little bit about how you came to know about Gene.
Right, yeah. Well, basically, I grew up in a household, which is a very small family. I just have a mother, a father, a brother, and a sister. And grandparents died when I was young. My actual aunt died when I was really young, too. So we kind of were closed off to the rest of the Rodemicks in the world. And apparently there's a lot of Rodemicks in St. Louis or in the Missouri area. And there's actually a town in, I think it's Illinois, called Rodemick. And I looked back and it's actually named after my family. Nothing to do with Gene Rodemick, but I guess that's where the hub of the Rodemicks are. I don't know how far back you have to go to find the actual relationship between them and us, but there is a relationship probably back in the 1800s. So we were kind of out here in L.A. by ourselves, and like I told you earlier, we got phone calls and we got, there was no email back then, but you know, we get letters in the mail of, oh, I'm a member of the Gene Rodemick fan club and this and that. And it was really strange because you don't have the internet. You can't just go online in the 1980s and type in Gene Rodemick and find out who he is. So it was quite a mystery. And my father, he's a mathematician and works for JPL NASA. And so he's kind of a quiet guy, never really, very introverted. So he never really talked about his past and what he knew we had to pry out of him. So like I said before, it was always this anomaly, this mystery of who this Gene Rodemick person was. So it wasn't until I actually went to UCLA and I was a student there that I actually started looking through the libraries there, and they were starting to put things on computers. And I'm one day for fun, and I'm also an engineer, so that's where I got my degree, but I have a huge background in music. And when I was in school, I did all the choir, and I played the piano, and I played the guitar, and I was in a band. So I had these two driving forces, music and math, which actually are very intertwined if you write music. So I would study in the engineering, I'd do my engineering work in the music library. So when I was bored during breaks, I'd type in Rodemick in the card catalogs or in the systems, and I was really surprised to find floods and floods of Rodemick come up. And it turns out that they have all his original sheet music there in the archives at the UCLA library. So that was quite exciting. So I started photocopying all the music and in turn started playing it and realizing that this music was hard to play. He was really good. I've been playing piano since I was probably five, and I couldn't play some of the stuff that he was writing. And he and his partner, Larry. So from there, I've always been a music buff as far as the music charts. And when I was a kid, I used to do weekly countdown shows from my bedroom. And hey, here's the number one song in America. So I get these books by Joel Whitburn, and they're the Billboard pop hits. So you can look up what artist had what number one and what year. And there was this book that I found at Barnes & Noble that is called the Pop Memories Book. And it's basically my Bibles. When I open them up, I memorize every page of these books. So I found this 1890 to 1954 Pop Memories book, and I opened it up, and I never in a million years would I ever think that my last name would be in there. And I flipped through, and there's Gene Rodemick's orchestra, had two top 10 hits in the 1920s. And I was just blown away that this legacy of me being so, you know, I had this dream. One day I want to have a top 10 and one day this and that. And I opened the book and there is Gene Rodemick with his two hits. So it was just a revelation. And when I told my father, he had no idea. He had no idea that really? His grandfather had these top 10 hits. And I had to basically school him about how big Gene Rodemick actually was in the day.
So I can see it would be exciting seeing the names there.
Yeah.
What was your first introduction to the actual music?
Well, what I did is, this is probably when I was going to UCLA in the late 90s. So I went on eBay and I actually typed his name in there also. Once again, lots and lots of Rodemicks came up, and it was all his 78s. So I went on to eBay and actually bought maybe 15, 20, 30 78s and took them home. And I was actually able to play some of them on an old 78 machine. It was really exciting to be able to listen to the music and kind of put myself back in the day. And then I went online and I found these CDs from the Smithsonian. It's Gene Rodemick Greatest Hits. It was just like, every time I took a step, I was like, you're kidding me. There's a Greatest Hits for Gene Rodemick, a 4-disc series, which I guess you even have too.
I have, yeah. So, I've had that for a long time, actually.
So once you have the music on CD, it's you know, putting the record on was a big ordeal, but popping the CD. And now when you go to YouTube now, you can type his name in and you can hear all his, you can see actually, it's really funny. You can see people putting the needle on the records, and you can, and they'll play it for you. So it's quite interesting.
Let's actually listen to some music here.
Let's do
How's
it.
How's that? That show goes on to play a number of records by Gene Rodemick's orchestra, including a couple of records that Ray specifically requested, as well as records by others of compositions by Gene, along with one of his songwriting partners, Larry Connolly, and others. But here are three records by Gene Rodemick's orchestra which were not part of that show, and I'm going to intersperse a couple of other pieces of the interview. when you first heard a Gene Rodemick record, you first heard one of those recordings from the early 20s, what was your reaction?
I loved it because when I was a kid, I grew up watching Three Stooges and Laurel and Hardy, and it kind of reminded me of the music I heard Laurel and Hardy in the shorts they did. So it was so great to hear that because no one makes music like that, at least today. Music is so commercial and so overproduced, and back then it just felt simpler. It's happy, it's fun, it's creative, and it just to know that I'm related to someone that did that kind of music and had that kind of success made me feel really good.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about what you do, Ray?
Okay. Well, as I told you earlier, I went to UCLA for engineering, but I've always had this love for music. I started collecting records and cassette singles in the late 80s. And as I told you, I'm huge on the charts. So I would go down and pick up Billboard magazine every Saturday or Sunday morning, whatever day it came out. It was before you could read it online. I had to rush down to the magazine store and I would see what's top 10 this week. And I'd go out to Tower Records and buy all the cassette singles or when they had CD singles, go home, put in my collection and do weekly top 10 shows with all my friends. And I'd force my little brother to sit at home and hear what the number one song was. And he to this day, he says that he appreciated it because it broadened his horizons. But back then, he could not stand listening to the top 10 each week. But ever since then, I've been kept collecting music. And now I have about 25,000 CDs. All in alphabetical order, and I still, to this day, collect the top 10 hits, but I've expanded my collection to music from Europe now. So, but that's been my constant battle, is that I had this mathematical background, which is like my father, but I always felt this music in me. And I've always wanted to play music, I've always wanted to sing, I've always wanted to be involved with music, produce music, and I never really knew where that came from, because neither of my parents were really musical people. And my brother, he's a sports guy. So this probably explains a little bit of that, the Gene Rodemick legacy and the fact that he was so into music. So I ended up working at UCLA at the college radio station, KLA. I was on the air there and actually got a job at KBIG 104, which was a radio station in Los Angeles here. And I did a show there for about 10 years. And now I'm actually a DJ in nightclubs in Hollywood. So I produce and DJ 3 or 4 club nights a week. That's why I ended up coming out a little late today because I was up till 4 in the morning last night. But that's the entertainment business for you. I have a degree in electrical engineering, but I actually never have had a job in engineering. I make all my money playing and performing music now. So it's...
Well, do what you love.
Yeah, it's I would never ask it to be anything different than that.
There you have 3 from Gene Rodemick's orchestra, which were not included in our 2012 tribute show. We started off with Hot Notes from March 10, 1926, the band's last session with Brunswick. In 1927, Gene Rodemick took over Pearly Breed's orchestra, but they don't appear to have recorded. We finished up with George M. Cohan's When June Comes Along with a Song from June 25, 1923. That features the wonderful slide whistle playing of Warren Luce, who was the Victor House drummer. His discographical credits include a few entries for slide whistle and one for playing traps in the Orquesta Internacional on a 1922 recording of Mis Tristezas. But Warren Luce made several vocals with Anson Weeks and his orchestra, and Warren will get his very own segment on the August 30th show, since his birthday is coming up on August 25th. In the middle of that set was Gene Rodemick's orchestra with Scissor Grinder Joe, recorded June 11, 1924. Rodemick could be considered a jazz pioneer, and Scissor Grinder Joe is an early example of scat singing. It's also possible that that was Gene himself doing the vocalizing. The vast majority of Rodemick recordings are instrumentals, but Jones and Hare recorded Hot Roasted Peanuts with the band in 1923, and Frank Silvano is given vocal credit on a couple of sides in 1924. There's also a possibility that Gene sang the vocal on She Wouldn't Do What I Asked Her to Do, recorded in November of 1923. Scissor Grinder Joe was composed by someone I had not heard of before, S.J. Stocco, S-T-O-C-C-O, with words by Haven Gillespie, which is, of course, a name you hear regularly on the show. Try as I might, I couldn't find what the S.J. and S.J. Stocco stands for. Again, if you do a search, you're likely to find only one other of his compositions, After a Little While, also with the words by Gillespie. But I did find several other works, including Some Jazz from 1919, and When the Drums Are Drumming and the Bugle Calls, with words by Matthew Eller. Stocco and Robert E. Hardy wrote Hold Me in Your Arms, recorded in 1925 by the Manhattan Dancemakers, a Ben Selvin pseudonym, and the pair also wrote Throw Away Your Hammer, Go Get a Horn, and Someone's in Love with You from Dear Me, where it was sung by Grace LaRue. I don't have any of those records, at least not broadcast quality, but I do have a record of S.J. Stocco playing trumpet in Paul Bees's orchestra, so we're going to take a short break from our Gene Rodemick tribute just long enough to hear Blue Evening Blues. Paul Bees and his orchestra featuring S.J. Stocco on trumpet, April 3, 1924, and Blue Evening Blues, written by Art Kahn and Vic Burton. At least there's a good chance that was S.J. Stocco. The new American Dance Bands on Record and Film shows Stocco and Rick Edkins on trumpet. In that same session, the band recorded Florita, with Stocco getting arranging credit, but that effort was rejected by Victor. I'm Glenn Robison, and you're listening to Rapidly Rotating Records, bringing you vintage music to which you can't not tap your toes from rapidly rotating 78 RPM records of the 1920s and 30s. To commemorate Gene Rodemick's birthday, I'm replaying portions of my 2012 interview with Gene Rodemick's great-grandson, Ray. We didn't mention it on the 2012 show, but following his recording career for Brunswick, in 1926, Gene Rodemick headed to Boston and opened at the Metropolitan Theater, where he had a 2-year contract as MC. In 1928, he was on New York radio, appearing on a 15-minute show on the NBC Red Network, then moving to the half-hour Armstrong Quaker Girl show, sponsored by the Armstrong Quaker Rug and Linoleum Company, which aired Friday evenings at 8:30 on the Blue Network. He was on the Red Network again on the Prophylactic program, a show sponsored by the Florence Manufacturing Company, which made Prophylactic brand toothbrushes, which were advertised as made in a clean factory by clean people. Gene was back to the Blue Network in 1932 for another 15-minute show called Hollywood Nights, and in 1932 he was the first orchestra leader on the radio program Manhattan Merry-Go-Round when it debuted on CBS. Around 1930, Rodemick was hired by the Van Buren Film Studio, and here's a portion of my interview with Ray Rodemick about that. Gene did what was called synchronization with cartoons that were produced by the Van Buren Corporation in the early 30s. Now, producer Emma D. J. Van Buren formed the Aesop's Fable Studio with Paul Terry, and they released their first animated cartoons in 1928. When Terry left to form his own studio, Terry Toons, it became the Van Buren Studio, and their main characters were Tom and Jerry. Tell us a little bit about Van Buren and the cartoons, Ray.
Well, what I have here, the most famous one, I guess, from there would be the Tom and Jerry cartoons. That's not to be confused with the Cat and the Mouse. I have a picture of them here. They kind of look like this one guy is blonde and another one is black-haired, and they're just two kind of goofy-looking kid guys, and they were called Tom and Jerry, and he did the music for that. And when I was at one of my nightclub events, this is how this another realization came about. I would come into the Avalon Hollywood on Thursday nights and set up my equipment, and they had always testing things out on the projection screens there. And for a period of about a month, they were showing these old black and white cartoons up on the screens. And I always thought it was funny because they were really goofy looking. And one day, literally after a month after coming into the club, I looked up at the screen and I saw the name Rodemick up on the screens. And I literally freaked out because I thought, wait a minute, this is too much of a coincidence. Because I don't even use my real last name when I'm DJing. I have a stage name, so they would never know that I'm a Rodemick. But these tech guys were just randomly playing these Tom and Jerry cartoons up on the screen that my great-grandfather had done the synchronization for. And that was another epiphany. I just could not, that show just goes to show what an impact Gene Rodemick really had on even today's world. These tech guys are in their 30s and they're kind of geeky and they're watching these old shows. So I went up and told them, and I don't think they kind of got it because it's too much of a coincidence. But yeah, so that was just sort of my revelation as to this whole thing with Gene. And
he also wrote original music for the 1932 documentary film Bring 'Em Back Alive, which was also produced by Emma D. J. Van Buren. It was about an expedition in the Malayan jungle, which was led by Frank Buck, capturing wild animals of all sorts.
We were talking earlier about how he died so young.
Yes, he was just 43.
Yeah,
it was a real shame.
And this was all these cartoons that he was working on in the studios. That was all stuff that he was doing sort of near the end, and I just wonder what would have happened if he had lived a normal life. So it's just interesting to think about that too. He died 3 years after my dad was born, so my dad never even had a chance to even meet him, or even if they had been in the same room together, they wouldn't have even known each other. He was too young.
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
Mm-hmm.
But we have some recordings, and I have the soundtrack here from a 1933 Van Buren cartoon. Which the title is Croon Crazy, and this stars a character called Cubby Bear. This was Van Buren's attempt to duplicate the success of Walt Disney's Mickey Mouse. All of the studios at that time were trying to come up with their own Mickey Mouse character, or at least one that would be as successful as Mickey Mouse. So in this cartoon, Cubby Bear is the host of a live radio show, but all of his guests that are scheduled cancel at the last minute. But as he says, the show must go on, so he winds up impersonating all of these people, and they were celebrities of the time. So you've got Laurel and Hardy and Mae West and Al Jolson and a Paul Whiteman parody in there. And this is edited down. So this is a portion of the soundtrack from Croon Crazy with synchronization by Gene Rodemick.
Ladies and gentlemen of the radio audience, the McHangnail Cuticle Company presents Cubby Bear.
I can prune.
And his radio review, starring Saul Reitman, Kitty Schmidt, and Hal Jolson.
I can spoon beneath the moon, but I'd rather spoon with you. Won't you?
Reitman sends a telegram, says he can't appear, and Kitty Schmidt is mountain climbing. She will not be here. Jolson broke his kneecap, he can't sing a note. And I got laryngitis, so I guess you're the goat. But the show must go on.
And I'd rather prune to you.
Ladies and gentlemen, when you hear the musical note, it will be exactly 12 o'clock.
Ladies and gentlemen, Saul Reitman.
Boy, her pride and joy, my mammy. I'm gonna walk the track till I get back to
mammy. I'm the gal they're talking about, and here's the reason for it all. I haven't got an awful lot, but what I've got a lot of.
Come up and see me sometime.
This program is coming to you through the courtesy of the McHangnail Cuticle Company.
There you have some really intricate orchestration and some top-notch musicianship on the soundtrack from Croon Crazy, a Van Buren cartoon from 1933 with the synchronization by Gene Rodemick.
I have to see that. They're trying to envision what was going on in that. It was very intricate.
That's available on YouTube, okay. So you can check that out. Probably just doing a YouTube search on Croon Crazy. The March 22, 1933 edition of Film Daily mentioned that Rodemick was managing the cartoon department at Van Buren, but by December of 1933 he had been replaced by Winston Sharples, who remained the main music man at Van Buren until the studio's demise in 1937. On February 24, 1934, Rodemick was making a recording with his orchestra for a Sunday night NBC program when he became ill. Despite his severe condition, he insisted on continuing the recording, and the following day was taken to the Medical Arts Sanitarium on West 57th Street, where he died of pneumonia 2 days later on February 27th, at just 43 years of age. He was interred at Kensico Cemetery in Westchester County, New York, where he's in good company, sharing space with Sergei Rachmaninoff, Marian Harris, Dolly Dawn, Lou Dockstetter, Tommy Dorsey, Peter DeRose, and other musicians, actors, vaudevillians, and notables. We'll never know what musical magic he may have produced had he not left us at such an early age, but fortunately we have a significant body of work to enjoy. French fencer and Olympic champion Lucien Gaudin was born September 27, 1886. He received gold medals in both foil and in épée team at the 1924 Paris Summer Olympics, and gold medals in foil and in épée individual at the 1928 Amsterdam Summer Olympics, putting him in a tie for best French Olympics performance. He committed suicide in Paris on September 23, 1934, after being wounded on the thumb by a non-fencer in a duel. Of course, fence, as in sword fighting, has nothing whatsoever to do with the typical wooden structure used to mark a boundary or control access, but no matter, here are some rapidly rotating records about fences, beginning with Chick Bullock.
Come out and get your lovin', now don't you keep me in suspense. Come on, come on, we'll do our turtle dovin', sittin' on a backyard fence. Come on, come on, the little stars are peepin', they're waiting for you to commence. Uh-huh, oh yeah, I kinda thought you'd weaken, sittin' on a backyard fence. It may be just another little backyard alley off the avenue, but I can see a willow tree, a moonlight valley in my golden dreams of you. Meow, meow, the kitty cat is cooing. He shows a lot of common sense. He knows, he shows, there's always something doing sitting on a backyard fence.
Thank you. stopped by the cottage that once we dreamed of. You share it with somebody else that you love. It's all filled with cheer while I'm out here on the wrong side of the fence. You fixed up the place as you might have for me. You made him so happy, why shouldn't he be? What joys he has known while I'm alone on the wrong side of the fence. How lovely and peaceful there in the night and in the quiet of dawn. The rose-tinted curtains, the little white porch, and a toy left on the lawn. Can't open the gate, I just can't say hello. It's your little gateway to heaven, I know. Be happy, my dear, though I'm out here on the wrong side of the fence.
Yes, and you wouldn't say no. You won't let me be and you won't let me go. I've gone to such an awful expense. All you ever do is straddle the fence. You won't enthuse and you wouldn't refuse. You won't be gay and you won't sing the blues. Why keep me in this awful suspense? All you ever do is straddle the fence. Oh, babe, look what you've done to me. Show me some sympathy. Don't be exasperating. You wouldn't say why and you wouldn't say when. You won't say goodbye, oh, where will it end? Why keep me in this awful suspense? All you ever do is straddle a fence.
Mills Blue Rhythm Band, credited on the label of that Vocalion 78 as the Chocolate Dandies and Straddle the Fence. The vocalist on that March 30th, 1931 recording was Dick Robertson. Before that, it was Lee Bennett with Jan Garber and his orchestra, very much in his sweet idiom, with On the Wrong Side of the Fence from December 14th, 1933. On the Wrong Side of the Fence was composed by Ellie Rubel with the lyric by Benny Russell. We started off that fencing set with a Triple R debut for the record and the band. That was Leon Belasco's orchestra with Sittin' on a Backyard Fence from September 22, 1933. The vocalist was Chick Bullock, who is, of course, no stranger to the show. Sittin' on a Backyard Fence was written by Irving Kale and Sammy Fain for Footlight Parade. Leon Belasco was born Leonid Semenyevich Berledsky in Odessa, Ukraine on October 11, 1902. He studied music in Yokohama, Japan, and for several years was the first violinist with the Tokyo Symphony. His 60-year career spanned music, film, and television, and he appeared in more than 100 films and TV series, including The Beverly Hillbillies, The Dick Van Dyke Show, and The Twilight Zone. Who knew? The Andrews Sisters also got their big break with the Leon Belasco Band. I'm Glenn Robison, and the show is Rapidly Rotating Records. Last week, April 15th, marked the birth in 1890 in Russia of Louis Milton Goldwasser, better known as Lou Gold. His family came to the U.S. in 1893, and Louis learned piano and was giving lessons while in his teens. At age 27, he was working professionally as a pianist at Hoffman Park Inn on Long Island. By 1924, he had formed his own band and was appearing at the Club Wigwam, which was located on 50th Street and 7th Avenue. The band performed remote broadcasts from the Club Wigwam over WHN radio, and on March 14, 1924, they made their first records for Cameo. By the end of the year, Gold was recording for many different labels under a wide variety of pseudonyms, and by his last recording session in May of 1932, he had cut about 750 sides. He retired to Florida, where he died on August 19, 1950. Here's Lou Gold.
Thank you. that makes you glad at one time, whose arms are you caressing? I'd like to know somehow, you got me guessing. Who are you guessing? Who gives you your kisses now?
Up and smile, everything is worthwhile when you're in love. I feel so gay in every old way. Why feel so sad when you can feel so glad? I never feel blue when I'm thinking of you, 'cause I'm in love. Troubles like bubbles, they are in vain. Face them or chase them again. Love drives your sorrows right from your heart. From it you never should part. Why don't you smile? It may be worth your while. Life in this world is worth giving a trial. Then you will long for the sweetest of songs when you're in love.
Cliff Roberts Dance Orchestra, which was actually a figment of the imagination of the folks at the American Record Corporation, since there was no Cliff Roberts and the band was actually that of Lou Gold on December 3rd, 1930, with When You're in Love, Smile. Speaking of figments of imagination, the vocal is credited to Rodman Lewis, who was actually Scrappy Lambert. Anyway, before that, it was Annette Henshaw with Lou Gold and his orchestra, credited as the Virginia Creepers, and Who Gives You All Your Kisses. That's from around December 6, 1927. Who Gives You All Your Kisses was composed by Don Elbel, E-L-B-E-L, and Bob Elbel, who also brought us Sorry in Blue and Back Where the Daisies Grow. We started off our tribute to Lou Gold with Irving Kaufman masquerading as Robert Wood and That's You, Baby, from May 10th, 1929. I'm Glenn Robison, and you've been listening to Rapidly Rotating Records. I hope you'll click in or tune in again next week. And as always, I thank you for your very kind attention.